Welcome to the Grace-Based Family Podcast.
We're your hosts,
Karis Murray
and Michelle Brook. This is a podcast where we look at the power of grace in the everyday lives of families.
We're excited for you to listen in on the conversation. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Karis.
Hey, so today we are talking about two types of thinkers. Right? I don't know if maybe these are if you can divide everybody into these groups, but I think most people fall into these two categories. And those two categories are scarcity thinkers versus abundant thinkers. Mm,
I love how you explain this. And when I first heard about this concept, I now view people through this lens, which is probably a little judgy, but it really does help me sometimes to think and help me with my kids. Am I being really a scarcity thinker right now, or am I encouraging abundant thinking with my kids? So explain what that means.
Well, I think a lot of people kind of, they hear that and they think, oh, is this optimist versus pessimist? Is this somebody who's kind of naturally happy, outgoing person versus somebody who, or a risk taker versus someone who's, more cautious and more reserved and sees what can go wrong. That's really not what this is about. I think those things that I just listed, those are probably just more ingrained personality traits. Mm-hmm. And I think you're sort of born that way, whereas scarcity versus abundant thinking is something that can be learned, and you can grow in this area. So if you find yourself, you know, having more of a scarcity mindset, you really can change your mindset. Whereas there's only so much, you know, you really can't change your personality much. You can't change some of those traits that you're born with, because that's how we're wired, right? So before I explain this, I just kind of wanted to put that out there that, these are ways that we can actually change our mind.
Mm-hmm. And reframe our attitude.
And reframe. Right. Yeah. Reframe the way that we view the world, mm-hmm. and the way that we process our experiences and what happens to us, mm-hmm. which is good news, right?
Absolutely.
Because if you find out that there is a way that you could be processing your experiences that's going to help you rather than hinder you, you would want to do that. Mm-hmm. So I would say I'm going to kind of compare and contrast scarcity versus abundant thinking. And it's an attitude, right? The idea that there are haves and there are have-nots. There are problem makers, there are problem solvers. There's morning people, there's night people, right? Mm-hmm. But some of that, like I said, you can't really change that much. But the perspective that we have can frame our attitude. So as Christians, I think our perspective is often contingent upon whether or not we have a clear understanding of where we stand with God. Mm-hmm. And understanding what his sacrifice for us means, understanding how we are set free by his grace. Mm-hmm. And I think from that freedom comes an abundance.
Yeah. In all areas. And we're going to talk about, you know, how you do life, how you view what you have, how you view others, all kind of through this perspective of, are we thinking with a scarcity mindset or an abundant mindset? And I think if we have a clear understanding of God and how he views us, that should really impact our perspective towards how he calls us to live.
Right.
And in our relationships and in raising our kids. Because I think naturally a lot of us tend to be scarcity thinkers just because of our sinful, selfish nature. It's a little bit about me, you know, everything is limited, so I want to get my piece of the pie, right? So how do we shift that mindset to be more Christ-like?
Yeah, and what you just said there, I think, is a great way to kind of contrast these two ways of thinking. If you're a scarcity thinker, you think that resources are scarce. You believe that life is this finite pie, that everything is limited, that there is only so much. Mm-hmm. And if you approach the world that way, then whatever someone else has takes away from you,
right?
From your family, from what you could have.
You know, I see this even with our kids. You know, I'll say, oh, Bennett did so great today in his school performance. He sang. He did such a great job. He was so cute up there. And then one of my other kids will say, well, I'm a good singer. I'm a good performer. Why aren't you praising me? And it's like, well, okay, just because I'm praising him doesn't take anything away from you. That doesn't mean that I can praise his accomplishments. You also are great. And you might have a time where I'm going to praise you. But this is not limited. My praise, my love is not limited right now. Right. I'm just acknowledging him and like focusing upward instead of inward and downward.
Yeah. And when we think that things like resources or opportunities or ideas or even love is limited, it creates this unhealthy sense of competition. Mm-hmm. It even creates, I think, something that's more sinister, and you see this everywhere in the world. It creates people who believe in having power over rather than power with.
Yeah.
You know, because if power is limited, if opportunities and ideas are limited, then you need to have power over other people. Mm-hmm. You need to use your power to oppress other people and keep them down. Because if it's limited, then the idea of sharing power and having power with people becomes a threat to you.
Right.
Right? And you can think of all the horrible things in history that have stemmed from abuse of power, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, and this sense that you have to have power over people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas abundant thinkers believe that there's plenty for everyone. They tend to be focused upward and outward, rather than downward and inward. And they believe that ideas, opportunities, resources, love is unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see this reflected in creation. I think you only need to look out to creation to see how true this is. I mean, think about, I'm sure you've seen, you know, maybe a video or photos before where it's like a picture of our galaxy with this tiny little dot and an arrow that says, you are here, and that's Earth. And then you zoom in and you see a picture of Earth from space, and then there's a little dot and it's like, you are here, and you zoom in and that's where you are, where you live. And you can take it even further. If you reach down and you grab a handful of dirt, there are millions of organisms, millions of little pieces of life in that handful of dirt, and uncountable stars, and our universe that just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding and expanding. And that's just what we know about it. Right.
I love when they find like, oh, we just discovered a new species of frog. I'm like, what? We're still discovering
a new primate. I mean, the ones that always like blow my mind are like, we found a new primate.
Where has that been for thousands of years?
And so just I think you can see the vastness and the abundance of God just in nature, just in how we you know, the creativity and the unlimited nature of beauty and life in his creation. And you know, I think so let's kind of talk about, and I want you to share you know, kind of your ideas and stories on these, but I think when you're a scarcity thinker versus an abundant thinker, you approach different things in life in a way that can either help you or that holds you back. So, scarcity thinkers, how do they view what they have?
You know, I think of a scarcity person that as somebody, like I visualize someone like holding everything in their hands close to their chest, you know, versus someone who is an abundant person and they have open arms with things. But I think scarcity people have, scarcity thinkers, whatever you want to call them, have a hard time sharing. And not only with your tangible stuff, but sharing their time, their credit, ideas, friends. You know, there's nothing worse than like a possessive friend. And that takes a lot of coaching, I think, because even my kids will say, oh, well, why did Brian not invite me over? He's hanging out with, I don't know, I'm just going to make up names, Jacob. That's not really fair. And I'm like, well, you don't own those guys. Like, you should share. You should have an open-handed relationship with your friend that you would want to encourage them. Hey, go hang out with other friends. That's good. You're mm-hmm. going to refine each other. We'll all be good friends. You want to be happy for them. But scarcity thinkers are like, that's my friend. I don't want anyone else hanging out with them.
Yeah.
Or that's my toy or whatever.
Yeah.
Or as you see, as you get older or kids get in the workplace, taking credit for things or like school projects, right? Mm-hmm. When they're like, well, I came up with this idea for a Rube Goldberg machine. And you're like, really? Because I think we all came up with it together, right? So it's they want the credit. They don't want to share. They're kind of hoarding and because they want approval or, you know, even they hoard love sometimes from even parents. Like I have some kids like, I love you. No, I don't want him to sit by you. You're my mom. And it's like, mm-hmm. hey, there's enough love to go around. I can hug all of you. We'll take turns.
Well, and I do think that's why creating a grace-based culture in our home is so important because I think, you know, we are born with a tendency mm-hmm. to slip into this scarcity thinking.
Yeah.
And sometimes we get messages from the world around us that lead us to believe that things are scarce, that mm-hmm. love is scarce, that you know, opportunities are scarce, and it's easy to buy into that, especially if our bent is already towards scarcity. And so yes, it does take coaching with our kids for them to see like there is enough love to go around, mm-hmm. there is enough happiness to go around.
Right.
You can be generous with your approval and praise and mm-hmm. all and possessions and all of these things because there's enough.
Yeah.
There's always going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that certain, you know, some of that comes from a place of privilege in terms of resources, because if you do grow up in a situation in which, you know, there isn't enough food.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't always enough food. There isn't enough money for clothes. There isn't enough. And so that's real. So I want to make sure mm-hmm. that I state that, like, that's very real.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I have seen so many people, even from those kind of situations and backgrounds, approach life with such generosity.
Right. Like the widow's mite, right? Think of her. She has nothing and she gives the little bit that she has. And there are so many people that have so little and are so open-handed and mm-hmm. such abundant thinkers where they're like, no, I will feed my, I can hardly put a meal on the table for my mm-hmm. kids, but they have a hungry friend. And so they can have my portion tonight. It's mind blowing when people with so little are so generous.
Well, and I've seen this so clearly when I have traveled to places in the world that are not as prosperous as the United States of America. And there are certainly people with food insecurity and, mm-hmm. you know, right on our doorstep in the United States. But when you do go to countries where resources are much more scarce, they are some of the most generous people I have ever encountered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have one chicken and they will slaughter that chicken to feed it to you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and you just think, oh my goodness. And so I guess the contrast of that though is that when you do go to prosperous places, more prosperity doesn't necessarily breed more generosity in people.
Right.
So people seem to either have this generous approach to life, this mm-hmm. abundant view of life,
mm-hmm.
or they don't.
Yeah.
And the amount of money that they have or don't have seems to only sort of magnify how they view life already.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were generous when they were poor, they're going to be generous. If they come into more money, if they earn more money, if they have more, and if they're stingy, they're going to be stingy, you know?
Absolutely.
So, and I think abundant thinkers, they kind of hold all that they have in open hands. And when you share resources and recognition and time and ideas and opportunities and power and profit, especially love, you end up attracting people like that
mm-hmm.
to you, because abundant thinkers like to be around other abundant thinkers. And if everybody is sharing, you end up kind of having more mm-hmm. in the end.
Right.
Right?
And it's a lot more joyful. I feel like being a scarcity thinker is very fear-based sometimes. It's like, I don't trust God enough to provide, you know, the opportunities or the recognition or the income or the approval or the love. And so, I don't know. It's just very self-sufficient, self-mesh, well, all those things.
I love this quote by Jim Elliot, who was a missionary in 1956 in Ecuador, in the rainforest down there, to a group of people called the Alca Indians. And he actually ended up being murdered by people in the tribe in his during his mission. His wife, Elizabeth Elliott, stayed behind and ended up evangelizing the people of this region. And it's a great story. There's actually a movie called The End of the Spear, if anybody kind of wants to learn that story that hasn't seen that movie. It's great. But anyway, Jim Elliott said, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep in order to gain what he cannot lose."
It's true. And it's all God's so anyway.
Right.
And we can't take it with us.
Right. We can't take it with us. And but I love the part where to say it, in order to gain what he cannot lose, and gaining what you cannot lose, meaning, you know, the love of God and the grace of God. Mm-hmm. And then those intangibles that like joy, like peace, like a sense of calm and just steadiness in life,
right?
That are so valuable. So the way that these two type of thinkers view others is also very different. Scarcity thinkers view others as competition. They have a hard time sometimes being genuinely happy for the successes of other people, including their own family or close friends or people who they work with. So people who they say they love, and I believe they do love them, but if you're viewing everything as a finite pie, it can be hard to be happy for other people when they do well.
And we all know people like this or have friends in our lives where when something really cool happens to you, you're almost scared to tell them because you know they're going to be like silently judgy. Or like, oh, you know, or jealous or kind of angry. And it comes off as, I don't know, I've had people say, oh, well, you know, that must be nice to get, you know, have your husband plan nice things. Mine doesn't do anything. And you're like, okay, well, can you just be happy? Like, you know, I'm not trying to, I'm just saying this was a cool thing we got to do. Like, so I know, I have a friend that she's very financially blessed, but she will like go to Iceland for a week and not say anything. And I think she's scared of some of the opinions or backlash from some of the friends in our group. And I'm like, that's awful.
Yeah.
You went to Iceland? Oh my gosh. I need to see the pictures. I need to hear all about it. That's amazing. And that's an abundant mindset versus like, oh, wow. I'll probably never get to go to Iceland. Or like if she went to Iceland, that means I'm not going to go. In our mind, we think like there's not enough joy or exciting things. And not that everyone, I will never go to Iceland. And that's fine. I'm just happy she got to go. Right. Yeah. But I think when you think about the people in our life, and hopefully it's not us. So this is kind of a wake up call. Are you the person that when someone says, hey, I got a new car, or my kid did amazing at their all-star tournament or whatever, are you kind of like inside a little judgy or jealous, or are you really happy for them?
Well, and don't you want to be the friend who people want to call and tell their good news to?
That's what I
know. I have a couple of great people in my life who if something good happens, I get excited to tell them.
Yeah.
Because I know they're going to celebrate with me. Right. I know they're going to be happy and they're just going to rejoice with me.
Right.
And that's something that we're told to do, to rejoice with those who rejoice.
Yeah.
And it increases our own joy.
Absolutely.
It's almost as though we got that thing or that good thing happened to us because we just can rejoice with people who are rejoicing.
Yeah. And I think this minimizes, if you're an abundant thinker versus a scarcity thinker when you're thinking about others, really minimizes that poison pill of comparison, right? It's so easy to compare, especially with social media. And I think women really struggle with this probably more than men with, oh, look at her house, look at her body, look at where they got to go on vacation. I know men probably struggle with this too, but I don't hear it as much from the guys. But when you are constantly rejoicing with those who rejoice or being excited that they, whatever, built this new house or got to go on this trip, whatever. These are all lavish examples. But you're just content because you're like, God's given me what he's given me. That's fine. But I'm not going to compare. I'm just going to be happy. When you can somehow give that comparison up to the Lord and say, okay, we all have different gifts and blessings and things. But to miss, like, you miss out on life when you're too busy comparing your life to others.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's one thing to be happy for a friend that got to go on a vacation. And it's another thing if, you know, maybe you have a child who's really struggling. Mm-hmm. And then you have a friend who's seems to have kids that are good at everything.
Right.
Or, yeah. You know, a colleague gets promoted mm-hmm. into a job that you kind of wanted. Those are the times when I think the rubber meets the road right. in terms of, can we release this view that opportunities and mm-hmm. and ideas and joy is scarce when right. it is hard, when it is something hard, that yeah. you wanted or something that you know you'll never have mm-hmm. you know it can be really, really hard. So I think we're giving simplistic examples in yes. some of these ways just to kind of make the point, but understanding that this can be hard when it's for things that are just deeply felt right. to you.
Like something like infertility, like right. a couple that, who cannot have a baby, and you see all these announcements, right, of, you know, expecting whatever on social media or, you know, cards in the mail. That would be heart-wrenching. Like, yeah. and I don't know what that feels like, and I can't put myself in those shoes. So I'm not trying to minimize that. Please hear us saying that. But with even in that situation, I think someone who is an abundant thinker doesn't have this mindset of, oh, I see that like as a challenge or mm-hmm. comparison. It's more, oh, I grieve for that, but I'm so happy with them.
Yeah.
Right? I can still have an abundant mindset when things are hard.
Yeah. I think ultimately, you know, the conversation you have to have with yourself is my scarcity thinking helping me or hurting me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it'll be clear that it holds you back.
Yeah.
So even in those hard things, even if you're somebody who is struggling with something and you see other people succeeding, it can be really easy to just let those feelings of inadequacy or comparison or jealousy seep in. But ultimately, that's hurting you. That's harming yeah. you. And it's probably spilling over and harming the relationships closest to you.
Right.
That bitterness is going to grow. And so mm-hmm. just like with forgiveness releases us
right.
from the grip of injustice and pain. Mm-hmm. And abundant thinking releases us
yeah.
from the grip of jealousy and bitterness and just seeing life with this lens that says there's not enough and that we're not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's why it's important that even during those really, really kind of difficult moments, we can talk ourselves into abundant thinking.
Right.
And that's what's great. Mm-hmm. You know, we really can talk ourselves into doing this.
Yeah. And when you're applauding other people's accomplishments or blessings, in the process, you begin to partake in that person's joy. And I think it's a slow refining process. But for me, like that, I backed away from social media years ago. I mean, I'm on it because I do the school Facebook groups to know what's going on. But I saw for me, I was creeping in like, oh, well, my picture doesn't look as nice as theirs. And I'm like, I don't want this. This is yeah. so toxic for me. I don't want to overthink. Like, first of all, I don't know how to do filters. You know me. It took me like 45 minutes to figure out how to even post a picture. So about five yeah. minutes, 5 years ago or whatever, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of over this.
Yeah.
And some people love it and it's great. And that's, but for me, it became like a challenge, probably mm-hmm. just my personality. And so it's like, I got to back away because it was making me more of a scarcity person.
Yeah.
Have a scarcity mindset more than abundant. And I go on there and I look and it's easier for me to rejoice with other people's funny things on there and exciting things when I don't feel like I'm competing.
Yeah.
Because I've just taken myself out of the ring yeah. altogether.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Well, and I think that goes right into kind of the final kind of aspect of this type of thinking that I wanted to talk about, and that's how we view adversity.
Mm.
how does a scarcity thinker view adversity versus an abundant thinker?
Yeah.
Because life is full of adversity, mm-hmm. and we will all face it no matter who we are.
Right. And I think our kids really copy what they see modeled for them with this.
Yes.
If you are, if there's an issue at school, right? And a parent or a teacher's, you know, whatever, judges your kid's castle project too harshly or their science fair project. There are parents that whine, they complain, they nag, they will send emails to teachers, start talking bad about the teachers, and they just kind of build this idol out of their misery, right? Mm-hmm. But it's really causing damage to these kids because they're seeing like, oh, this is what you do when faced with adversity. That's what a scarcity parent, you know, how they might approach that. Where an abundant parent is kind of like, okay, yeah, it wasn't really fair.
Yeah.
How she judged you, how your teacher graded your castle project or whatever. And you feel the pain and you feel the adversity, but you don't use it as an excuse and you don't nag, you don't whine, and you kind of teach your kids and then you fall forward, mm-hmm. and learn from it, yeah. and move on. I don't know. That's just something we're going through right now.
Well, and I think you can retrain your own mind, and then, like you said, your kids are watching us. They're going to model what they see. But we can retrain our own mind to see adversity as opportunities. Mm-hmm. And this is something that good therapy does well.
Yeah.
It helps us learn how to look at the things that we're facing and see the opportunity in those things.
Yeah.
And, you know, senseless death and horrible things, it's, this is not about being Pollyanna and just saying everything's great. And it doesn't mean ignoring injustice. I mean, some of the most abundant thinkers I know are also some of the most fiercest fighters for justice, especially justice for other people,
mm-hmm.
justice right. for people with less power.
Yeah.
And so I think all of that fits into a landscape of being an abundant thinker.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes from a place of abundance rather than where you see, okay, look, life is full of adversity. It doesn't all make sense. It doesn't all have to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, we can move forward. Mm-hmm. In this, we can be refined. In this, we can draw closer to people and let people love us, right?
Right.
I mean, when you go through something hard, especially if it's a health crisis or something like that, you mm-hmm. really see the people in your life mm-hmm. who love you,
yeah.
come forward and serve you. And it can be much more difficult to receive help
mm-hmm.
than to give it,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like when, we've had some hard health stuff happen this last year, and we had two members of our family in the hospital having surgery within a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And I know you brought me dinner during that time. Oh, it was like really hard for me to mm-hmm. accept people bringing dinner over.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I do for people when they're sick all the time. Mm-hmm. I love to sign up on the little sign up list to don't go bring dinner over.
Yeah,
like it's just a no-brainer for me. Like, oh, of course they're in the hospital, or oh, they're going through chemotherapy. Of course I'm going to bring dinner over.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's you just think, oh, I don't want to accept help. I don't want to, whatever. And it's just, it can be really, really hard. So I think that's how we can kind of see adversity as an opportunity. Even when it's so, so hard, it's an opportunity to, A, let the people around us love us,
mm-hmm.
and to let God love us.
Right.
To accept his love.
And to not let any adversity or failure or disappointment define you. Because we're all going to have it, like you said, whether it's mm-hmm. health or relational things, whatever it is, it's going to come.
Mm-hmm.
And it might come daily. But it can't define you, where that misery or that adversity becomes your identity or your idol, right?
Yeah.
It's constantly, I think daily we have to choose, am I going to be a scarcity thinker? Am I going to be an abundant thinker today? Mm-hmm. Or with this really hard disappointment or with this really hard relationship.
Yeah.
So it's challenging. We're making it sound like it's easy, but it's not. I mean, it's just something to keep in mind.
I mean, as we're comparing and contrasting this, I think it can come across as though we're saying people are always either an abundant thinker or a scarcity thinker. No, I think mm-hmm. we waver and we waffle. And I think in some areas of our life, mm-hmm. it may be more natural and easier for us to be abundant thinkers mm-hmm. than in others. You know, there may just be a couple of things that we're holding really, really close to the chest mm-hmm. and we're not releasing
right
into God's power.
We're
still holding on to them because they are so tender mm-hmm. and so vulnerable. And that's another thing. I think abundant thinkers are also the people who embrace vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they see that there is enough help and love and support mm-hmm. to go around.
Yeah.
So, yes, as we lead our kids, I think that our example on this is the thing that matters the most. Mm-hmm. But also coaching them, like you're right. talking about with your boys.
Yeah.
Coaching them through that.
And, right. Because every day they get in the car, and they're like, it's not fair. Right. That is like yeah. literally the first thing I hear every time I get to school. I'm like, oh, geez, what is it now? Right. And it's yeah. something. It's so-and-so did this. We didn't get to play on the basketball court.
Right.
So-and-so invited so-and-so over and it was my turn. I'm like, oh my gosh. Right. So it's like, okay, we can either think like this or we can view it like this. But ultimately you have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And we as adults have a choice, and we can live in our fears and our disappointments and our regrets, or instead we can take our cues from God and Christ, right? And he has done such a powerful work on the cross on our behalf, and we can take our cues from him and say, okay, he was an abundant thinker. He saw all the crud and all the sin that was in us and all the gunk and all the adversity. And he was just like, nope, I want them to have life and I want them to have it abundantly. And that will take my life, but I will do this for them. And that big, abundant, big picture mindset is what we need to try to take on every day.
I want to end with Romans 12:2 that says, don't be conformed any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Thank you for listening to the Grace-Based Families podcast. This is part of Grace-Based Families ministry.
For more resources, check us out on gracebasedfamilies.com/podcast or stream us on all major podcasting platforms.
Once again, this is Karis
and Michelle.
Until next time.